20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's up, Packer fans? Welcome in to an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. Thanks so much for being here today. Just want to start by giving a quick shout out to both Packer Report and Cheesehead TV. Both are friends of the show. They both allow us to host the Pack-A-Day Podcast on their channels every single day. So make sure you are making both Cheesehead TV and Packer Report, again, part of your daily routine, just like you make Pack-A-Day a part of yours. We appreciate it a ton. We appreciate them. So make sure you are supporting them in any which way you can. Now, today, what we're going to be talking about are the Packers' biggest risks going into this season, or maybe a different way of looking at it are some of these risks that the Packers didn't do enough to mitigate this offseason. What I want to start off by saying here and be crystal clear about, there are exactly zero perfect teams in the NFL. All 32 have some level of risk. All 32 have question marks. All 32 are going to have to navigate the weaknesses or those potential risk, you know, risk factors within their given teams and their given lineups. That is universal. There's some pretty darn good teams out there. None of them come remotely close to perfect. The journey of the NFL season is getting better, is finding ways to overcome those risks, to overcome adversity, and to make yourself a better, more well-rounded team throughout the course of the entire season. That's a huge part of the journey. So just because the Packers do have some risk and maybe took on some risk this offseason doesn't mean that they are broken beyond repair. It doesn't mean that they can't overcome some of these potential issues and risks that do exist on the team. The other thing that I want to mention is that risk is not always necessarily a horrible, awful, no good, very bad thing. Sometimes it is necessary to assume some risk. And what I mean by that is if you're taking no chances, if you're not swinging for the fences every once in a while, you're probably going to have a fairly bland, maybe not ultra competitive team. You have to take some risks with players. There is always going to be an element of risk reward to decision making and to player acquisition and to how you build a roster. There's no perfect formula here either. It's not if this, then this. It's not that simple. And sometimes as a GM, there is a time and a place to take some risks. I've talked about this on so many different times in the past of how I loved what the Bucks did as a mid-market team, and they basically just took the biggest high-risk, high-reward player year after year after year until they stumbled upon Giannis, or until they selected Giannis. And all of those misses of a semi-miss of Brandon Jennings, but a miss of Joe Alexander and Ejion Leon, amongst others, those all went away as soon as you found that guy. When you found Giannis, that none of those other ones matter anymore. Do you care that you missed on those? You found the franchise guy. You won an NBA title. And we see a little bit of that with Goody as well, especially in the first round of the draft. He is willing to take some risk. If you don't think Jordan Love in the first round moving up to get him and what that meant for the franchise, what that meant for Aaron Rodgers, the direction of the team, there was a massive amount of risk in that decision. And to be fair, it still hasn't entirely paid off yet. It takes kind of Super Bowl, not just in that one move, but in order to kind of pay everything off, and they haven't accomplished that yet. But I don't think anyone's too upset that Brian made that move at this point, but there was a ton of risk in doing so. So today we're going to be going over all these different risk factors that do exist with the current state of this 2024 team. And we'll start with the hiring of Jeff Hafley as a defensive coordinator. I don't know of very many people at this point in time who are just like, I didn't like that hire. What an awful hire. I'm sure there are some people out there. I'm sure there's people who disagree with just about everything in some capacity. But for the most part, it does seem that the overall temperature on Jeff Hafley is very positive. People seem to be excited, feel like this was a really good hire, the right direction to go in, or at least are willing to give him the benefit of the doubt until we can see what this defense can do. And I think that's the right stance to sort of take on it, is let's give the guy a chance one way or the other. But make no mistake, there is a legitimate amount of risk here. His last defensive job in the NFL was as a defensive backs coach for the 49ers in 2018. It's not like 2018 was a decade ago or something, but as a defensive backs coach in 2018, first of all, the NFL has changed from 2018 to 2024. And second, you are going from a defensive backs coach in the NFL to now being a full-fledged defensive coordinator. His only job as a defensive coordinator was in 2019, when he was a co-defensive coordinator at Ohio State at the college level, granted with one of the biggest programs in college football, but he wasn't even the sole defensive coordinator of that specific team. Then, of course, he became the head coach at Boston College from 2020 to 2023. And then he is now taking over the reins as the Packers signal caller on defense, the scheme, just like everything. He is the guy. And like I said, I'm personally good with the hire. I'm excited about it. I have no major issues. He has been phenomenal in his press conferences, and I know you can't win anything in a press conference. He has very much won over his team. Like, you can tell this defense is excited to play for him. That counts by far and away for something. But he's going to have to show it come Sundays, or at least come the opening Friday, and then from there on out. There is still, like I said, some level of risk here. It's, and to be clear as well, there were other options that were available that had more NFL defensive coordinator experience, or at least more NFL experience. It doesn't mean that there would ultimately be a better or worse defensive coordinator. It just means there maybe would have been a little less risk. There may have also been less potential reward. And if Matt LaFleur trusts that Jeff Hafley is going to be the guy to lead this defense into becoming a Super Bowl caliber defense, then he deserves the opportunity to do so, even if one of Matt's few weaknesses as a head coach has quite frankly been hiring coordinators. I am willing to still give it the benefit of the doubt. As I mentioned, I am very excited about the Jeff Hafley era. I am ready to be hurt again, but let's see what happens. But I'll just end it again here by saying there is legitimate risk by taking a college football head coach who had varying degrees of success at Boston College, some good, some not so good, and now giving him complete and utter control of the defense. You bet there's risk involved in that. There's also potential reward, and hopefully we see that side of it. The second risk, moving from Aaron Jones to Josh Jacobs. I think there is a significant amount of risk in this move. Once again, there is a huge potential reward as well. If you get 2022 Josh Jacobs, it's just a win, like, period. Like, that guy is better than probably any version of Aaron Jones that we've ever seen. And that's saying something, because Aaron Jones is freaking phenomenal. And if Josh Jacobs can be better than that, that would be even more phenomenal. But we also saw a 2023 version of Josh Jacobs that left some to be desired, that left you wanting more, that wasn't as good as Aaron Jones when he was on the field in 2023. That, quite frankly, wasn't even really as good as his backup running back for the Raiders in 2023. The difference between 2022 Jacobs and 2023 Jacobs was stark. He went from playing in 17 games to only playing in 13 games. He went from 1,653 rushing yards to 805 rushing yards. He went from 12 touchdowns to only 6 touchdowns. He went from 4.9 yards per carry to 3.5 yards per carry. Went from 53 catches to 37 catches. From 400 receiving yards to 296 receiving yards. He went from a 91.6 PFF grade to a 65.0 PFF grade. And as I mentioned, his backup running back, Zamir White, 71.7 PFF grade, and he was able to find a way to get 4.3 yards per carry. That's not even to mention that Aaron Jones is a key piece of your DNA, a massive part of your locker room, somebody that When Dontavian Wicks made a bad play, Jones is out on the field to lift his head up and get him back to the sideline and ready to go for whenever his next play is. He was a massive part of the Packers' success both on the field and off the field. Now, Josh Jacobs has every right to be a leader in that locker room as well. By all accounts, he has that ability to be one of the real true leaders in the locker room. Great, you know, locker room presence and consummate professional. He has the ability to be a big time running back in this league. And Green Bay is banking that Jacobs is going to stay healthier, that the long-term, you know, sort of vision for Jacobs and just the long-term, ability of Jacobs with at his age is going to be better than what it's going to be at this point for Aaron Jones. They're banking on the younger, bigger back rather than the older back who has had some more recent injury issues. And of course, they mitigated the risk a little bit by taking Marshawn Lloyd in the third round as well. But there is, I think, a real legitimate, I won't say threat, but risk of getting worse at that running back position. Even if Aaron Jones missed time, he played in their most important games. He played when they were at their best, and he played really freaking well. And he created when things were not there, something that Josh Jacobs could not do for the Raiders a season ago. So you bet there's absolute risk in going from Aaron Jones to Josh Jacobs, even if it does or it could very easily end up being the better move, and it could pay off in a significant way. It could go in the other direction as well. Hey friends, most people don't tell you that one of the hardest parts of becoming an adult is trying to actually kickstart your credit. Young adults get set up with credit cards so early, and so many people immediately start to accumulate debt as they begin their college careers. I know that's exactly what happened to me, and this is why I wish Kickoff was around when I was in credit trouble. I absolutely love Kickoff because of its simplicity and its results. Here's how simple it is. You make one-time payments, credit bureaus see your good behavior, and your credit grows. And as for those results, users with credit under 600 increase their credit by an average of 30 points in the first month. And what's even better, there's no credit check, and you can cancel at any time. Kickoff is the number one credit building app out there and has over 100,000 positive reviews on the App Store. So join over a million people building credit with a Kickoff credit account today. Get your first month for a dollar. That's 80% off the normal price when you go to getkickoff.com/packaday today. That's Kickoff without the C, getkickoff.com/packaday. Must sign up via getkickoff.com/packaday to activate offer. Offer applies to new Kickoff customers first month only, subject to approval. Average impact of 30-point increase in first month based on Equifax VantageScore 3.0 changes for Kickoff premium customers with starting credit below 600 who made their first on-time payment between January 2021 and March 2024. Payment and credit activity outside Kickoff can have an impact on your credit. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer subject to change. Individual results may vary. Number three is an interesting one. I know Peter Bukowski, I think, has been a little bit more on the opposite side of this, saying Green Bay's offensive line is great and there's no real question marks here and they deserve more credit. I'm a little bit torn and in between, but I'll say what I've been saying all offseason. I still think the overall offensive line and offensive line depth is one of the biggest risks to this offense being a top-tier offense. And the reason I say that is I've seen Jordan. I've seen these wide receivers. I am excited about these tight ends. I'm still very excited about the 1-2 duo of Josh Jacobs and Marshawn Lloyd. But I have question marks about the offensive line. I kind of put this in tiers. You have tier one, Elgton Jenkins and Zach Tom. We are great with that tier. That tier freaking rules. And I'm excited about those two players along the line. Then tier two gets pretty worse pretty quick. And it's Rashid Walker. I like Rashid. I think he's clearly a starter. That's not guaranteed, by the way, but I think he is. I think he's a good offensive lineman. He's not in that Elgton Jenkins, Zach Tom category, though, and he's going to have to earn his job still. And he's your tier two, your third guy. Then your tier three is Josh Myers and Sean Ryan, guys who have played. We've seen them out on the field. Josh Myers for 3 years now hasn't been great. Have there been some flashes? Yes, but not consistency. Sean Ryan, a much more limited amount of playing time, but same thing. Have there been some flashes with him? Absolutely. Has it been consistent? Absolutely not. maybe in large part to him not getting consistent playing time, that could help. But I think that is a starting caliber tier, but a pretty big question mark tier with Sean Ryan and Josh Myers. Then you have two players that were two of the worst offensive linemen in football a season ago, in Royce Newman and Andre Dillard. Yes, they're depth, but I don't think that's anything that you want to trust at the moment. And then you have the completely unknown tier, three rookies, Travis Glover, you've got Jacob Monk, and Jordan Morgan. Could one of them be really good? Yeah. Could two of them or three of them be really good? Sure, maybe. But all three of them could take time to acclimate, and maybe none of them are ready to go. And I do believe that there is some level of risk here with the overall depth. Now, to be fair and to play the opposite side of this, what did you lose? You lost David Bakhtiari, who played one game. You lost Yosh Nijman, who is not coming off a very good season. And you lost John Runyon Jr., who, while he did play a bit better towards the I would say, last quarter of the season, did not have a good season at all. He struggled the vast majority of the year. Are you really that concerned about losing John Runyon Jr. and Yosh Nijman? I'm really not. I do think they can replace those players, but I also didn't feel like the offensive line was, let's just say, quite good enough a season ago to just be like, they're good, set it and forget it. We don't have to worry about it anymore. We can just, we've got our offensive line. And clearly Green Bay thought that way as well, because they go out and get Jordan Morgan in the first round. Maybe Jordan will be ready. Maybe Jacob Monk will be ready. Who knows? And there are potential options here that could mitigate some of this risk. But how I view this offensive line right now, feel really good about Jenkins and Tom. I'm good with Rashid Walker. And then everything else is just a bit more watered down and a bit of a question mark. And to be fair here one more time, this is an issue with the vast majority of the league. It is very, very difficult to find good offensive linemen. Green Bay has done an awesome job in drafting and developing at this particular position. Hopefully this is another example of that with those rookies and with some of the younger players on this team, because they're going to need guys to step up. You know, they're not going to just stay healthy through the entire course of the year. Maybe, you know, and even if they do, we still have some question marks with the starters, but I want to see if this offensive line can take a step in the right direction. Cause right now I do think there is some real risk at that spot. Number four, you have no legitimate backup quarterback. Yeah, maybe Sean Clifford takes that step in year two. Maybe Michael Pratt's just really good, really quick. I don't really expect either of those things. I think for the most part, if Jordan goes down for any significant period, you're probably just screwed. And as we talked about in the story that, you know, from the Colts is, you know, they didn't really spend a lot of time with their backup quarterbacks and didn't really invest in it because they knew if they lost Peyton Manning, they were bleeped and they didn't practice bleeped. And I understand the philosophy here. If you lose Jordan for any significant period of time, you're screwed. There's probably no coming back from it. And more maybe at that point, you go and see who's out there. Maybe you go try to grab a Ryan Tannehill or make a trade throughout the league and do something at that time. But right now, not having that legitimate backup that could go 4-4 in an 8-game stretch, because I don't think Clifford or Pratt go 4-4 in an 8-game stretch. 2-6 maybe, but I don't think they go 4-4. Maybe they could go 2-2 in the right stretch of four games, but I don't think for an extended period like 8 games, they're going to hold things together. And if you do lose Jordan for any significant period, that could be something that maybe comes back to haunt this team. But either way, it is definitely a threat and a risk because they don't have that guy as a true backup right now. Number five, they didn't bring in an established kicker. Yes, they have a wide open competition between undrafted rookie free agent, a veteran who has not kicked well in his history in the league, and Anders Carlson, a draft pick from last year who struggled mightily. I love that they're having this open competition. I love that they already moved on from one and went to another, and they're just churning through these guys till they find the right one. There's no guarantee they find the right one, and they could have another issue going into this year of not having a real quality kicker. And we saw how that haunted them last year, and it could be an issue in big games or clutch situations again this year. Could they have gone out and got a kicker that was better? Yeah, there were some free agents out there, and they could have addressed it in a different way. They decided not to do so, and hopefully that does not come back to bite them this upcoming year. Next up, cornerback two. There is still risk in what Green Bay has at that position. Are there answers potentially there and Carrington Valentine, Eric Stokes, maybe even Corey Ballantyne? Oh, sure. Clearly, one of those guys could step up, take that job, and just solidify it. Or, heck, maybe Goody finds another guy off a practice squad like Rasul Douglas. Those are things that he's done in the past as well. But I think it's fair to question it. Eric Stokes, outside of his rookie year, has not looked good. And even in his rookie year, has looked, you know, slightly above average, which, again, I'll take, especially from a rookie. But that's been a while now. There's no guarantee that he comes in and plays like a starting caliber corner. And I've talked about the Valentine situation. You're not going to find many people who are more excited about Carrington Valentine in year two. I think he will take a step. I think he will play better. But we've been here before with Ladarius Gunter, with Demarius Randall, with, you know, what, Quentin Rollins, with Josh Jackson, with Eric Stokes, with other corners on this team who look okay to decent to start, and you're expecting them to take a step forward, and they just don't. They either plateau or, in a lot of those cases, got worse. If Valentine, that's just who he is, that rookie corner, as a rookie seventh round pick, just starting and surviving, is like, yeah, that's amazing. Like, you, that's a good draft pick. Like, they got something out of him and you're excited about him. But now if he's the guy and he puts up a similar season that he did a season ago, and that's just who he is, I'll just be honest, that's just not good enough. So there is definitely risk here at corner two. And I can't say for certain they've got that figured out and yep, they're just going to be good to go at corner from here on out. I think there's a possibility that they have it, but it's not certain. And there is risk there. Next up, is the linebacker position good enough? This is another one where they definitely threw resources at it. Devondre Campbell is gone. Edgerrin Cooper is in. Tyron Hopper is in. We haven't seen a consistently good Quay Walker yet. That is still a big time question mark. Now you put two rookies as your maybe your next two guys. Isaiah McDuffie is a nice rotational piece, depth piece, special teams guy who can play some linebacker. You don't want him patrolling the field for 800,000 snaps this upcoming year. He's not that guy. He's a good player for your 53-man roster because he can back up at that spot and be a good special teamer. There's a place for him in this league, no question. There's a place for him on this team, no question. But he's probably not the guy, again, that you want as your starting inside linebacker. And then it's certainly probably not going to be Eric Wilson or Christian Welch or Christian Young or anyone else on this team. And I think that is, again, fair to wonder at such a very important position. I'm no longer on the inside linebacker is a non-premium position. We have seen the best defenses in the league have really good inside linebacker play. More and more teams are attacking the middle of the field and specifically trying to target inside linebackers, young inside linebackers. Green Bay will have a question mark here, and there is risk going young. And they are very, very young at that position with Quay, two rookies, and Isaiah McDuffie as your top four. It's not a veteran-led position. And listen, they had a veteran leading them last year in Devondre Campbell. That didn't work either. But there is question marks to just in general, can that linebacker group be good enough? And how quickly can Edgerrin Cooper and Tyron Hopper get to the level that they need to be at to make this a better linebacking core than it's been in some time? Number eight, did they do enough to help the run defense? Or maybe just not doing enough to help the run defense? There is, I think, a significant risk here as well. Green Bay has been in poor situations defensively these last few years, and probably even longer than that, because they are letting up 4.4 yards per carry, 10th worst in the NFL. It was over five yards per carry the year before that. And you're setting up teams for success on second and third down. You're not getting them in second and third and long situations because teams can run the ball on you. Now, this is a new defense. There's going to be an extra player in the box, I think, a lot of times with the way that Jeff Hafley wants to play, and that will help. That will absolutely help. But from a talent standpoint, from a roster standpoint, it's your same edge rushers. It's your same interior defensive linemen. You know, it's your Quay Walker, still linebacker one. You know, yes, you maybe get a little bit of a benefit from the safety position playing up, but your only new guy in the front seven that's really expected to play probably significant snaps is Edgerrin Cooper. To expect to go from Devondre Campbell to Edgerrin Cooper, and that's going to be the key to you now stopping the run, that's a lot to ask. And again, everyone else is basically the same. Same slot corner too, and Keyshawn Nixon, maybe Bullard gets some time there. But overall, you have to wonder, did they do enough? And if they didn't, if they do allow 4.4 or more yards per carry again, it will be a very difficult position for this defense to be in, new defensive coordinator or not. You got to be able to stop the run. And if you don't, you're setting yourself up for failure. There is risk there as well. Number nine, I had on the list. I took off the list. I put it back on. Giving Xavier McKinney or any player a four-year $67 million contract with $23 million guaranteed is always going to invite some level of risk. I don't know of anyone who is complaining about this deal, who didn't want to do this deal, who's not super excited about Xavier McKinney. When we talked at the onset about, yes, there is risk, but you have to take risk and there's reward that a lot of times comes with that. This is that. So there's risk with this. You give a huge contract. And here's the thing with McKinney, a top of the market, top of the market contract for a Xavier McKinney. You bet there's risk in that. Is anyone upset about it? I don't think so. Is everyone excited about it? Pretty sure. I'm not going into it any deeper where we need to discuss why this could be a massive. Yes, you give a guy a big contract and he doesn't live up to it. Yeah, there's risk. You don't ever go and get yourself good players. Well, there's risk in that too. So I'm not going to, again, go any further on it, but just know when you play a guy top of market value at his given position, if he doesn't live up to it, yeah, there is going to be risk in that. And last but not least, I am recording this early. So it is, again, there's a chance, hopefully, that'd be great if you're listening to this in the future and Jordan Love has already signed a huge contract or a contract and he is a long-term member of the Green Bay Packers. It's going to happen at some point if it hasn't happened already, but you can bet there is a massive amount of risk when you give a huge franchise-altering, life-altering contract to a player that you saw for the most part for, yeah, we'll just say one season, one really good season, which was, again, more backloaded towards the end of that season. But still, we'll just say one really good season. There's absolutely risk involved in that as well. But one that you absolutely have to take. There's no real other option. And like I said, most teams in the NFL would be more than happy to be in that option to take on that risk and give that massive contract to Jordan Love. But there is a huge amount of risk that goes along with it when you're tying that many resources into one single player. So those are your risks. Jeff Hafley is defensive coordinator, going from Aaron Jones to Josh Jacobs, the offensive line depth, no legitimate backup starting quarterback, not bringing in an established kicker, cornerback two being a legitimate question mark. Is the linebacker position good enough? Not doing enough to help your run defense, giving Xavier McKinney a massive contract, and eventually, if it's not done yet, giving Jordan Love a massive contract as well. All risks, many understandable. Many, I get exactly why they happened, exactly why they went in the direction that they went in. And others, there are opportunities for those risks to turn into rewards, or they've given themselves outs or options that could lead to them not actually being risks, like the running back position. Yes, Jones to Jacobs is a risk, but Jacobs and Marshawn Lloyd could just be really good and that just goes out the window. They've set themselves up to try to mitigate a lot of these as much as they possibly can. What do you think? What are the biggest risks for the Packers that they've done this offseason or going in to this upcoming regular season as we inch closer and closer? Appreciate all of our Hall of Fame and All-Pro members, Most Hated Minnesotan, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Shea Broad Dad, Brandon Paletta, Jennifer Wright, Boom Handle, Donald Lee, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Donald Decker, Dan Miller, Alex Huang, Arnaldo Espinosa, Peter Rataka, Caleb Cookster, and SoCal Pack. I'll see you guys tomorrow, but until next time, and as always, go Pack, go.